This is Fresh Air. I'm David Bianculli, TV critic for the New York Daily News, sitting in for Terry Gross. My guest, Mitchell Hurwitz, is the creator of the very non-traditional Fox sitcom, Arrested Development. The show is in its third season now, and returns with new episodes starting Monday, after being preempted by postseason baseball. Arrested Development hasn't drawn a large audience yet, but it has earned lots of praise and awards. For its first season, it won the Emmy as Outstanding Comedy. For its second season, it won for Best Comedy Series Writing. The show stars Jason Bateman as Michael Bluth, the only sane person in a family of eccentrics, egomaniacs, self-deluded showbiz wannabes, embezzlers, and adulterers. Bateman's co-stars include Jeffrey Tambor as the family patriarch who was sent to prison for his illegal dealings in the construction industry. Tambor also plays his less evil twin brother. Jessica Walter plays the family matriarch, who makes Leona Helmsley look tame. And Michael's siblings and in-laws are played, just as wonderfully, by such quirky actors as David Cross, Tony Hale, Will Arnett, and Portia de Rossi. Arrested Development is fast-paced, very dry, and extremely funny. Here's a scene from the pilot, when Jason Bateman, as Michael, confronts the rest of the family with some bad news.
Okay, guys, they are going to keep Dad in prison at least until this gets all sorted out. Also, the attorney said that they're going to have to put a halt on the company's expense account. Interesting, I would have expected that after they're keeping Dad in jail.
You know, Michael, Dad did name Mom as his successor. And I'm putting Buster in charge.
It's a good choice.
Buster? The guy who thought that the blue on the map was land?
He's had business classes.
Wait. 18th century agrarian business, but I guess it's all the same principles. Let me ask you, are you at all concerned about an uprising?
Okay, that's it. I'm done. I'm sick and tired of the greed and the selfishness and all the taking. Forget it. I got a son to think about. And you know, Lindsay, by the way, I expected this from them because they're completely oblivious. But you should know better.
When Mitchell Hurwitz went on stage in September to accept his latest Emmy for Arrested Development, he vented his frustration, with typical sharp-edged humor, at his show's inability to draw a large audience. "The Academy has twice rewarded us," he told the TV viewers at home, "for something you people won't watch." When I spoke to Mitchell Hurwitz, I began with the ratings for Arrested Development. I actually think of Arrested Development, I've been a TV critic for so long, I remember the first year of Cheers, where at the end, at one point in its first season, it was the lowest-rated program in all of television.
And yeah, I remember that.
And it was such a great show, and you just had to say there's nothing wrong with the people making the show, there's nothing wrong with the show, there's something wrong with the audience finding it, and I sort of feel that about Arrested Development. And I'm on the outside. What do you feel like?
Well, there's
inside?
A great deal wrong with us, personally, if you're, you know, I mean, there's a lot of drinking. I think that's a negative. You know, there are many theories on why this doesn't have a bigger audience. There was so much initial positive press that very generously said that it was a smart show, which is a very nice thing to say. But I think it may have put people off and made them feel like, well, I don't want to be preached to, or I don't want to watch something that's unfunny and subtle. And really, you know, our delivery on this show is very dry. The stories themselves and the comedy itself is very broad. So I have always felt that we do have the right combination to get a big audience, but it just, for whatever reason, hasn't hit that zeitgeist and hasn't been promoted in such a way that people understand what we're selling here.
The show is almost always described as smart, but it's also dense.
Yes, it's dense. Well, listen, you know, I mean, it's funny. One of the things that has been one of the joys of doing the show is filling out the details. It has been just a hallmark of the show for some reason. And I think it's because myself and the other writers all come from situation comedy. And in situation comedy, you know, you're working in front of an audience, you're getting laughs, but you're only really able to get 3 laughs per page. And we've all done that for a while, and this has really been an opportunity to just pack in as much comedy as we can because we don't have to hold for laughs. But, you know, the hope is that we can tell stories about characters that aren't stock characters by showing, you know, the inconsistencies within the character. Whereas in situation comedy, oftentimes you can only tell one one story. A character just becomes a dumb character or a greedy character or a selfish character. And hopefully these characters are more nuanced, although just as absurd.
If I understand this right, Ron Howard not only narrates it and is an executive producer, but it was his idea to film using handheld digital video cameras.
That's
is that
right.
true?
It is. He definitely was the visionary behind this whole thing. He wanted to do, he had done both as a producer and as an actor, both single camera television shows, which are shows that are shot like a movie,
mm-hmm.
and multi-camera shows, which are shows that are shot like a bad movie, I guess you would say. They're shot like a sitcom with several cameras shooting the action all at once in a three-walled set. And his feeling was that, you know, the comedy was sharper on the multi-camera shows, the sitcoms, because there was time to vet the comedy, there were run-throughs, and you got a number of takes at it. And in film, you know, there's so much time spent lighting and putting together the technical package that when you finally get a chance to do the takes, you really only have time to do two or three takes. And, you know, he kind of was aware of this new technology, this 24p, which is 24, I guess, per second, 24 frames per second videotape, which looks very much like film, doesn't require extensive lighting, and, you know, uses kind of the vocabulary of shows like Cops or Blind Date or some of the reality shows.
There's something to shoot for.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But, you know, the savings was going to be in rehearsal and in run-through. And in effect, that is basically what we have today. You know, we don't have a formalized rehearsal period. But if we get on a set at 8 o'clock, we're up and lit and ready to shoot at 8:10. And, you know, you can run the scene 14 or 15 times. And that's really where the comedy comes from. And particularly in a family piece, you know, that's where people really start to interact and overlap and learn each other's rhythms.
There are plenty of inside jokes in this show.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering...
It's very self-referential, in a way.
Well, there are some that... For example, one of the easiest ones is you always end the show with next on Arrested Development and have cast members act out things that never happen.
That don't happen,
I don't know that that's ever happened before in television. How did that idea come about?
Maybe that's not working for us. You know where that came from? The question they ask when they test these pilots, you know, there's an enormous amount of testing they do on pilots before they decide which ones to put on their schedule.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the main questions is, would you like to see this again next week? So I just thought it would be funny to kind of trick them and say, here's what's going to happen next week, right before they were asked that question. And, you know, it worked to a certain extent. And then we found, you know, this is a great way to wrap up stories and get a couple extra jokes in and, you know, you get to end on a big laugh, whereas if you didn't have it, maybe you'd have to end on like a sort of clever piece of dialogue. And it has become just a really fun part of the show, but also a really onerous part of the show, because we'll get done writing the scripts and then say, oh, now we got to write the next on,
mm-hmm.
which is never going to happen. Look, the tough thing about this show is that it does reward those who pay attention. And my feeling has always been that there is a market for that kind of thing. I know I'm that kind of TV viewer. I love studying The Sopranos and Curb Your Enthusiasm and The Office, you know, both the British and the American one. And so although that The Office has a very different tempo, obviously, than this show. So, you know, in a funny way, we often feel that we're really making a show for the new technology here. We're making a show for TiVo, and we're making a show for DVD, and it really becomes, you know, part of our objective in making this thing. Particularly now that we see that, all right, these numbers are kind of staying where they are, and yet the DVDs appear to be selling pretty well. So it becomes this new challenge. Whereas when I started writing television, much of it was disposable. There is kind of the feeling that this might stick around for a while. So we're encouraged to put as much in as we can while they're giving us the keys to the building, you know.
Mitchell Horwitz, your TV credit, your credits are pretty limited, but they start with a hit. I mean, Golden Girls, I think, is the first thing that you're credited as doing.
Yeah, that was amazing fortune.
So
me.
How did you get that job, and what did you learn there?
You know, I got that job the way I advise many people who want to break into this business to get a job. And I started working at the production company as a runner. which is like a gopher, really, and picked up the coffee and delivered the scripts for Paul Witt and Tony Thomas, who ran Witt Thomas Harris Productions. And they produced The Golden Girls. And I spent about a year and a half with them and worked with them personally kind of became a type of assistant for them. And, you know, was writing in the meantime and had been writing since high school and before, obviously, but I really learned the business that way and used that connection to get my scripts read. There are many ways to do it. Many people come out and just write what are called spec scripts or speculative mm-hmm. scripts for episodes, for shows that already exist, and, you know, hope to find an agent and use contacts and that kind of thing. This happened to be the way I did it, by getting to know the people involved.
But how do you go from here's your coffee to here's my script when you're handing them things?
You know, those are tough years. Those are really, for me anyway, they were very anxious years. And I just kept writing and more than anything kept learning and getting better. And, you know, by developing relationships with these people, and it works this way for me now with the people that work on my show, I'm more inclined to read a script of someone who's been working on the show and has been giving themselves to it than I would just to pick a script off a pile or read an agent submission. So, you know, at least for my way of thinking, that has been a more effective way to get into the business. And, you know, I turn in these scripts and ask people to read them. And at a certain point in my development, they were impressed enough to let me write an outside script. And then from there, get into a staff writing position, which is what happened on The Golden Girls. And then, you know, you sort of rise through the ranks. I had developed a very strong relationship with Paul Witt and Tony Thomas, and they were, you know, unbelievably generous with me and put me in what they call a show running position early on. In fact, right after The Golden Girls, The Golden Girls spinoff, Golden Palace, which is often confused with the Chinese takeout place. And that was maybe the funniest thing about the show.
Now, excuse me if I have this wrong, but Golden Palace, didn't Mark Cherry of Desperate Housewives work on that as well?
You know, I'm not speaking to Mark Cherry. I'm extremely resentful. And I want to make that very clear. Yes, Mark and I worked together on The Golden Girls. Mark is a very good friend, actually. And then we did Golden Palace together. And you know, we both had similar kind of roads. We both kind of knocked around for a while. You know, Mark was always so talented. We sort of had no doubt that he would be successful. But, you know, you need a lot of luck, too.
Well, he's appeared in your show. So obviously,
yes,
guys are still at least cordial.
The children picketed Mark Cherry's house. The children picketed for, you know, keep sex within marriage.
On the show, we should say.
On the show.
Yes.
Yes, they picketed. And he came and he poked out his window and yelled, "It's a satire."
Well, what
was
it like?
Cameo.
What was it like this year when you won the Emmy for Best Writing in a Comedy and you beat out Mark Cherry for Desperate Housewives pilot?
Well, that was, I mean, obviously it was very surprising, and we didn't expect that to happen. And if anything, it was, you know, we just saw it as a promotional opportunity and focused on that. It was, you know, I feel that the Academy and the critics have been very generous towards us because they want to encourage risk-taking television, which seems to be happening more and more, by the way, that there does seem to be more risk-taking in primetime television. But I've always felt that we're the beneficiaries of that goodwill. And I think that might have been an example of that, where the Academy felt like, you know, they've got enough rewards over at Desperate Housewives. Let's do what we can to keep the show on the air. And I think it did keep the show on the air.
But since you and Mark worked together in the trenches, what did you say to each other afterward?
I, you know, mocked him, and I poked his belly with the Emmy. He was very happy for me, and I was, of course, extremely
I'm sorry you
happy
said no.
For
I
me.
Like I liked that image, by the way.
Oh no, he's a great guy. He was so supportive, and you know, the only loss was that we were so sure that Mark was going to win the Emmy that we had actually written a scene where Mark Cherry, the character that has appeared in our show, mm-hmm. sued the Bluth Company for building a faulty house that he bought, and the image was going to be Mark Cherry putting his Emmy on the mantle and the Emmy crashing to the floor as the mantle gave way. So I really wanted to do that gag and poke fun of ourselves for losing the Emmy, but then we won it.
ruined a good joke.
Yeah, we lost a good joke.
We're talking with Mitchell Hurwitz, the creator of Arrested Development. This isn't the first time that Fox has given a somewhat shortened season order. When they did it to you the first time and cut you back from 22 to 18, that ended up on the air somehow. Can you talk about that and how that was received internally?
That was a little seditious. But, you know, we made fun of ourselves, too, because we're legendarily behind on scripts. You know, I'll turn in the script at 3 o'clock in the morning that's going to start shooting at 7 that morning. So we had just gotten the cutback from 22 to 18, and coincidentally we were looking for a device to say that their business was in peril, the Bluth Company housing business was in peril.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what seemed the obvious thing to say was that they had, you know, sold this order for 22 houses, and they just found out that it had been cut back to 18 houses. And every time someone said that, you know, another character would say, "Those bastards." we called ourselves on it, too, because Jason, the Michael character, was on the phone saying, you know, "This is outrageous. You know, we were commissioned for 22 houses. You cut it back to 18. We had the plans drawn up and everything." And that's, we had Ron Howard say, "Actually, that part wasn't true. But they would have gotten them done on time. They always had." So, you know, we were at least saying, "Listen, we're not prepared either. But we would have made it."
And what was the Fox reaction when they first saw that or saw the scripts?
They thought it was funny. You know, they're great. Gail Verman was there at the time, and she was such a fan of the show and such a supporter of the show. And now we've got Peter Liguori there, and he's, you know, the same thing. I mean, I really do believe that Fox has desperately wanted this show to work. They have really supported it. I, you know, would say that the promotional effort has not been as effective as it could have been, but it is not for their lack of wanting it to work. I think for whatever reason, they've decided they don't want to allocate the funds to the promotion of this show, but rather will give those funds to the production of this show. And you know what? I'll take it.
And then, Mitchell, my final question sort of puts on my other hat of being a TV critic as well. One of the things that's so much fun about watching Arrested Development is how much it rewards people who have watched a lot of television, that there are so many TV jokes and TV performers who come in, and just the Ron Howard, Andy Griffith jokes that keep going back and forth.
Yeah. Isn't that fun? We had Henry Winkler jump the shark in one of the shows. The shark, they found a shark that they thought had bit off Buster's hand, but it wasn't, in fact, you know, the right animal. So he said, well, and it was actually the episode where we were asked to mention Burger King, which was kind of a jump the shark moment, to use the television nomenclature. So Henry Winkler said, "Well, I'm going to Burger King," and jumped over a shark.
Mm-hmm. But you guys are not like anti-TV snobs that are doing a different type of television to be better than television. You are people who came from television
not.
And are sort of, I don't know, glorifying in it.
I hope so. I mean, it really is. You know, there is nothing mean-spirited about it. I mean, we do come from this, and we were raised with this, and you know, it is a big part of our culture. And we, you know, look, it's so great having Ron Howard's voice on this thing, because we've heard this voice for 30 years. So, you know, what fun to be able to mention Andy Griffith. In fact, in one episode, that maybe the episode you're talking about, they had hired Andy Griffith to sit behind them in the courtroom and kind of look like Matlock. And he saw the dressing room that they'd given him and split. In fact, he was supposed to be on the show, but we couldn't get him out in time, so we had to rewrite it. But he saw the dressing room and left. And the line we gave, I guess, Lindsay, was he thought we were making fun of him. And suddenly the narrator speaks up and says, "Nobody was making fun of Andy Griffith. I can't emphasize that enough." So
yeah,
there is, you know, this deference that Ron was paying to Andy, which is kind of fun.
Well, Mitchell Hurwitz, I hope you have many more years of writing and doing this sort of stuff on Arrested Development.
Thank you
That's very much for being on Fresh Air.
Well, thank you, David. This is really fun.
Mitchell Hurwitz, creator of the TV sitcom Arrested Development. Here's a taste from the current season, in which Jeffrey Tambor and Jason Bateman, as father George Bluth Sr. and son Michael Bluth, are discussing possible courtroom tactics in the father's upcoming trial.
"Now listen, we can't just go in there and plead not guilty. We have to have someone big behind us, our own private Matlock. So I made some calls and I got him."
"Got who?"
"Andy Griffith." "Yeah, you never saw Matlock?"
"Not a real attorney, Dad."
"Now for $10,000, he'll actually sit behind us in court and read the paper. For 15, he'll actually sit at the defense table. For $20,000, he'll twice lean forward and whisper something in your ear. Oh, white suit, that's extra.
Well, that's an awful lot of money for the stupidest idea I've ever heard.
The juries love him.
That's just it, Dad. There won't be a jury because we are pleading guilty.
I am not guilty. I didn't want to tell you this. Are you ready for the bombshell?
Andy Griffith wasn't the bombshell?
I'm a patsy. I was set up by the Brits. A group of British builders operating outside the OC contacted me for a partnership to build homes overseas. I did not know they meant Iraq.
We've got a picture of you with Saddam Hussein.
I thought that was the guy who played the soup Nazi.
Come on.
I told him how much I liked his work.
Arrested Development returns to the Fox schedule on Monday. Seasons 1 and 2 are both available on DVD.